I met Peter in the skilled nursing floor of St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco when I was 25 years old and serving there as a chaplain intern. We were playing bingo in the activities room, which honestly was a pretty depressing place, though everyone was trying to make it seem cheery. The real joy was that this was a brief chance to be in community for these folks, many of whom were living in the hospital long term. In time, Peter asked that I come and sit with him while the nurses changed the dressings on his wounds. When I came, I saw that they were many and terrible. Peter was in his 70s. He was a black man, bald, and from what I read in his chart and what I heard in his stories, life had been very hard on him. He had end-stage AIDS and with it, large open lesions covering his skin. His illness seemed like a kind of modern-day leprosy. And truthfully, I wanted to look away. I wanted to retreat to a more comfortable place, but that wasn't really an option. Instead, I pulled my chair into the small space left between his bed and the others that were crammed into this old room. And Peter took my hands in his, and we talked while the nurse did her work. It was excruciating. And he called out in pain again and again. Finally, it was done for that day, and he breathlessly asked me to find the little bottle in his nightstand, quick. I rummaged around through all that was in the drawer, and then tentatively, I lifted out a small plastic bottle with amber-colored liquid inside. A worn sticker on the bottle read, "Blessed Anointing Oil. Pentecostal Gathering 2004. And I handed the bottle to Peter, who promptly handed it right back to me. "Bless me," he said. "I need you to anoint me." I was unsure what to do or even what I was allowed to do. Remember, I was just a little baby seminarian at this point. But in the moment, I decided that his pastoral request surely must supersede whatever our rule book might say. And so I poured out some oil, and I prayed with him, making the sign of the cross on his forehead. Thank you," Peter said, taking more of the oil himself and rubbing it into the lesions that were not bandaged. "That helps my wounds to heal up real good," he said. We kept talking about his life, about his friends living on the street and the violence they faced, about his family back in Arkansas. I felt sorry for him and worried about what the weeks and months ahead would hold for him. But then, as if to set this rookie chaplain straight for the things that thankfully I had only thought, he gave witness. "I'm not afraid of dying," he said matter-of-factly. "I'm right with the Lord. I'm right with my family. I don't have any regrets. I don't want to die in pain," he said, "but I've had time to make peace with everyone." Tears welled up in my eyes, and all I could do was nod. Peter knew who he was. He knew he could claim God's blessing as his own. He knew that healing could come even as pain continued. And he knew he belonged to God. When we join Jesus this morning, he is on the move. The roads between Galilee and Jerusalem are hilly and curving and sometimes treacherous. It must have taken serious effort for these people with leprosy to find their way to Jesus, but they do. He is their hope. And they cry out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And he sets their healing in motion. He sends them into the faith community, and as they go, they are made well. One of those healed comes back to Jesus, thanking him profusely, but the other nine continue on their way. And Jesus seems less than thrilled about it. "Where are the rest?" he asks, sounding exasperated. "Weren't they healed too?" At first hearing, it sounds like the lesson here is primarily about gratitude, which is good, right? Gratitude shapes us. It makes abundant life possible in surprising new ways. Yes, we should absolutely make it our practice to pause and to come back and to say thank you. And there's more at play. There is context to the story that we could easily miss. First, there are the implications of leprosy. It was an illness associated with deep shame and isolation. If you had it, there would be walls erected between you and others, both literally and figuratively. This is why there were leper colonies, to keep everybody separate. This is what it meant to be untouchable. Jesus works to break down all these barriers between them. He sends the people to the priests as his way of making them whole. He sends them into the holy place, the one you had to be clean to enter, with the people who couldn't touch you if you weren't. Jesus calls for them to all be together, pointing to that as the recipe for healing. For those watching and listening, it is shocking. But the last of the 10 who was healed, there's yet more happening with him. It wasn't just that he was sick and therefore rejected. It's that he was a Samaritan. Earlier in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, showing us how stunning it was that he was the one who stopped to help the person the robbers had attacked. It was shocking because he was a foreigner, the most other, the most outsider anyone could be. Folks like Jesus would go to great lengths to avoid a Samaritan. And instead, Jesus heals him. He sends him into the holy place of the community, and on the way, the man's body is restored. The Samaritan returns in gratitude, and Jesus honors him, saying, "Your faith has made you well." He's made well, yes, and he's also made to belong. Peter taught me about this deep sense of belonging in ways that I still carry with me. Given his dire situation, I had fully expected him to feel lost to God. I didn't yet understand how someone could be suffering at that level and still be entirely confident that God was present with them. Peter taught me that. Peter also pulled me in close in ways that surprised me. There was so much dividing us. Age and race and class are flavors of Christianity, and at least historically, the fact that he had AIDS. I had not grown up being taught the fear and othering that came with that first wave of the AIDS crisis. But divisions like that tend to have staying power. They linger longer than we'd like to acknowledge. I have no doubt that Peter was aware of all these reasons that he and I should be kept apart. And he effectively said, to hell with all that, and invited me in close instead. He invited me into his pain and also into his hope. He showed me that for all the world, all the ways the world said we should keep our distance, we belonged to each other, and that together we belonged to God. This was more than 15 years ago now, and I expect that Peter died not long after we were together. And still, what he taught me remains true. The grace he invited me into in that sterile, overcrowded hospital room continues. That grace is what we're about, what we practice every time we gather. We come around this table, this motley crew of us, and we proclaim shoulder to shoulder that everyone belongs. That we belong in this place, that we belong to each other, and that together we belong to God. And from that place of belonging, we say thank you. That's what Eucharist means. It means simply thanksgiving. This is the gratitude to sum up all gratitude. It's our way of pausing, of recognizing all that has been given to us, all the ways we've been made whole and set free, and then returning to God with gratitude. Rest in this identity, beloveds, and behold your family. Claim your belonging and celebrate it, for it is already yours. And then, together, we get to pause and turn back and say thank you.